This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So much going on as we get into hour number four of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. There's a report Dak's agent and the Cowboys actually met today after reports had surfaced earlier that the Cowboys would not be doing any contract discussions until the CBA proposal was ratified. Maybe a little bit of a change of course from that story.
You think they ran into him at the Slippery Noodle? You think that was more of a St. Elmo's kind of thing?
No, that might have been at the Steak and Shake.
Okay.
At 3 in the morning, you could see the who's who of the NFL at the Steak and Shake.
Okay.
Trust me, I've done that.
Oh, man. A shake at 3 o'clock in the morning? That means you've had
greasy,
a great night.
Big greasy burger, too.
Okay, Michael Gelkin had the report here in the morning news. For the first time since September, the Cowboys and Dak's agent Todd France met to discuss the contract. Source tells Gelkin. No long-term deal expected until the CBA gains clarity. March 12th deadline for franchise tag looms. And then he followed it up saying the meeting between the Cowboys and Todd France did last about 30 minutes here in Indianapolis. Dak Prescott not the only subject of conversation. France also represents Malik Collins, who is scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent on March 18th. So I don't expect Malik Collins to be back. I wish they could afford him. But he did enough to generate the kind of revenue that puts him out of the ballpark.
Vegas, that's where he's going. He's going back with Rod Marinelli, my prediction.
Oh, that was a good combo there. Yep. Okay, that would make sense. Okay, and then as far as the discussions between Todd France and Dak's agent, I can imagine maybe he saw the reports that there was going to be no discussion. There were some things just to get clear as we sit and wait here for the next 2 weeks as the CBA could be. Negotiated and decided upon?
The fact that they understand what the parameters are, if they agree this is what direction, you can lay out a battle plan how you want to attack this.
Okay.
If we get the agreement, this is the direction we go. If it doesn't happen, then this is what we're going to have to do.
I mean, if I'm France, I'm thinking, come on, you made my guy wait a long time. He's kind of chomping at the bit here. What's new? We're at the combine now. Now you're telling us we're going to have to wait a couple of more weeks to get details? Come on, give us something, you know, give us a little bit of a, you know, when you're waiting for something to come through, you're trying to be patient, but in the back of your mind, there's itching and it needs to be scratched.
I wonder if they have a remorse about saying as many nice things that they did about Dak. Mm. And if France going to use that against, well, you love my guy. You keep talking about my guy. You want to sign my guy? You think he's long term? What's the problem here?
Right. Start bashing your guy maybe tomorrow. We'll
just not say anything. Just not say anything.
Is France the kind of guy to rap on the bus door and be like, hey, you keep saying a bunch of nice stuff with no damn movement. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
I like that. Is France a cuss at Steven kind of guy like Tank's agent last year at the combine?
I tell you what, Steven cussed at Tank's agent.
Oh, really?
With drink in hand. He says, you're not going to have to deal with my dad. You're dealing with me. Get ready for that. So, yeah.
Ooh, that doesn't... Steven, you know, he's a really nice guy, but there's also a vibe I get that he could be intimidating if he needed to be.
Steven Jones could be a very nice guy. He could also be hugely intimidating.
Yeah.
He gives you that stare, you know you've done bad.
Big guy. Okay, and now a powerful guy. I mean, he's been in the competition committee, and he's got tons of experience now. And hopefully, I do believe he's going to do a pretty bang-up job here over the next, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 years. In this capacity. Top stories at 5 o'clock, though, elsewhere. The NFLPA sending the CBA to the entire union for approval now. That's been the big story. And there's quite a few reports as far as what the particulars are. The revenue split shows it would go up from 47% to 48.5%, so under 50. Game day rosters would expand from 46 to 48 players. That seems cool. I know owners were fighting that because that means a couple of more guys are going to make somewhat legitimate money.
I'm going to reveal football ignorance here, Brian. Why is there such a thing as inactive players?
Because some teams will have an advantage. If they dress all, say, 53 players, and they don't have injuries, they're trying to balance it out. Because there's teams that will deal with injuries, and there's some teams that won't have injuries. So they want you to take – it gives their hurt players an opportunity to sit out,
okay.
And then you don't have an advantage. And so they're making you take seven guys away while we have seven hurt guys.
Okay. All right. I never knew. I never understood. I don't know why. Because the game check is the same, whether you're active or inactive.
Yep.
If you're on the 53, you get paid. Why not be in uniform?
Yep.
Do you think that
makes sense?
Is it a substantial change to get to 48? Is there a win to get to 48, or is this just a player ask?
This is a win for the players because, you don't want to pay more salary. Players, I mean, the Players Association want as many guys getting game checks, big checks every week. Keep adding that, keep adding that up. That's why it's important for them to have 48.
And I would imagine they put that in there just to be like, hey, we care about player safety. Because what they're doing is adding a 17th game is what they're doing. And so they're like, but here's what we're going to do to keep you safe.
I mean, the Joneses will tell us all the time, deadlines make deals. They're very influential in these things. And it's interesting to me that ownership as a collection is offering so many concessions so early in the game. I mean, we still have another season that could be played, another year and a half before you could have an actual work stoppage. I mean, they very quickly agreed to eliminate that $250,000 cap they wanted to do on week 17. It's like, okay, we're adding a percentage and a half. Over the lifetime of the deal, that's $5
billion.
Here you go. Here's $5 billion. Here is, we're taking away the cap. They want this deal done bad. And it's still not enough for some people because there are still quite a few substantial concessions that a lot of people in the NFL Players Association would want the owners to make. But I think the owners are going to bowl over the rank and file with so many of these concessions that the star players, your Russell Wilsons or Maurkice Pounceys, who are saying this is not enough, the other players are going to say, "But yes, but it's plenty, guys."
As important as the players are to the product, TV is just as important. That's what pays the bills. They're trying to make sure that the next TV contract they have is taken care of.
Yeah.
That's what they're worried about.
Yeah,
it's the players. Yeah, sure. We need you. Come on, come partner with us because we're about to hit this big TV deal.
Yeah,
get ready for it.
We're gonna get super rich, and we can't let this thing prevent us from doing the new TV deal.
Yep.
Especially over the next year and a half. That Bernie Sanders angle is fascinating because Sanders versus Trump is going to be such dramatic political television. Maybe two of the most polarizing candidates ever to make it to the general election at a time when the media has perfected their craft at polarizing America. they are going to make such a spectacle out of this that it's going to hurt professionals. Sports leagues ratings. So they're willing to give the players $5 billion. Just boom, please take this and agree now so maybe we can come over here and take an additional $10 billion from the TV networks.
That's exactly what they're going to do.
It's really, really interesting to watch all the arms of this come through. How about we get some Maurkice Pouncey? He's with the Steelers, right? He's the Pouncey with the Steelers.
Yes, he is.
And when this news broke earlier, he was driving around and hit record and then uploaded this video of him trying to talk sense into the rank and file members of the NFL Players Association.
Man, it's so crazy, man. I vote no. That our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that all that they ain't looking out for the best of the players. And if y'all want my vote, the Pouncey Twins vote no. And if any player, any one of our teams, if y'all hurt for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team stand the fuck up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down. Trust and believe. They trying to sign a ass deal just so these sitting the president can go around and smile and say, I got something done. You ain't get done.
Huh. Call me. I'll pay your rent. Man, that's passion. That's putting your money where your mouth is when it comes to this kind of stuff. And he, what, guaranteed deals, Article 46. What are the Russell Wilson tweeted as well. He gave obviously a more polished and tucked in a corporate retort. He said the NBA and MLB are doing it right. Players come first. All players deserve the same. We should not rush the next 10 years for today's satisfaction. So he votes no. And I think this is going to be something that splits the players. It was 17-14 with the player rep vote. And it'll probably be somewhere in the 50s to the 40s when it comes to the percentage when all these guys get together and cast their ballot.
Yeah, I think these team representatives, they're going to have to try and whip the vote. And if they whip the vote, it's going to be having to educate their players. And who are the ones that want to be educated and who are the ones who are like, just sign the damn deal. I need a job. Let's go forward from here. So, yeah it's going to be interesting to how the player representatives handle their teams on an individual basis.
You know, I don't know what the most the players could get from the owners is. Do you think the owners would ever let them walk out? Or if the players really drove it as hard as possible, saying, no, we want guaranteed deals and get off our ass. We don't want you to govern us. We want a real commissioner who's unbiased. Could they get all of that? Or do you think the owners would put their foot down eventually?
The owners would put their foot down. Those are billionaires.
Yeah.
They can withstand. They can weather the storm.
Yeah.
Whereas players can't, and that's difficult.
And at some point, they would say, no, we win deals. That's what we do, and we're not going to be. So they'd go looking for scabs or figure out, okay, you guys will be done, but another crop of college players is coming on. I think at some point, what Pouncey and Wilson are saying could be really, really interesting. And if you have the security of tens of millions of dollars in the bank, maybe you're willing to try it. But I don't think any of the players who will never leave the game with $1 million in the bank want to sacrifice even a single game check over that. And I can't blame them. You know, I'm sorry that, you know, I don't make as much money as you guys do, but that's like 10 out of the 53 guys, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, those guys have so much money, so you can afford to stand on principle. I'm trying to pay off my house before I have to go get a real job. You know, I want to always have a place that I can come home to, and you know, before I get out of the league, I need all of the game checks to make sure that happens. Dallas Stars are currently 10-1 to win the Stanley Cup.
We should have got it when the number. We could have got better odds a while back.
Yeah, we could have
got better odds.
They do have now the 7th best odds. Yeah, I bet they were over 100-1 there during that. What was it? A 1-7 start?
Yeah, it was terrible. Playing the best hockey since that start in the league.
Really?
Actually, look at the record overall, and they've been incredible on the road right now. Goaltending has been huge. On both ends of that.
So to me, Brian, I don't think I know as much about the Stars or hockey as you do, but I think at 10-1, I'm still seeing tremendous value considering overall in sports, defense wins championship, and in hockey, a hot goalie or two can carry you right on through to the finals. And to me, that's describing the Stars team.
Well, there was a lot of teams that made moves at the trade deadline to try and position themselves in a little bit better. The Stars kind of stayed where they're at, but odds on favor right now would be Colorado and Tampa would be the two teams that you would have as the top echelon teams for Stanley Cup. But the Stars do it the right way. They've got two goalies that play well. They rotate their lines. They believe in the four lines they have. They score 3-4 goals a game. They give up a bunch of shots, but their goaltending bails them out. It's one of those organizations that have done it. You look throughout. It's an older team, veteran players, but they've really galvanized under Rick Bonus, who's been this interim coach. They believe every night they go out there and they play very well. They win games, like I said, whether it's on home ice or on the road, you got to respect the way they play.
You talk about the veteran players, but also you have a blend of the young players. And when the young players can start taking over games like they did last night with Gurionov and Hintz, that's when you're starting to say, okay, our veterans are going to do it some nights, but other nights our youth and our speed's going to be too much. Now you can beat teams in a lot of different ways, and along with the goal, you're dangerous.
Yeah, they do. They give up a ton of shots. They have been, but again, the goaltending have been, they stood on their head, as they say. And they had very few shots last night in Carolina. The shots they did have, though, were on target and beneficial.
Okay, I did want to pass along FC Dallas home opener 3 days away. There's still some tickets available. You can get your North Texas State Soccer Association tickets at $14 if you get online there and stuff. Yeah, there we go. 16 seconds on soccer. Luchi Gonzalez and FC Dallas at Toyota Stadium this Saturday. The 25th season of Major League Soccer. They did it. They made it. I was talking with Dan Hunt there, one of the owners up there at FC Dallas, and he said, my first day working for the MLS, we went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So Brother Clark joked with me that, hey, you got hired and fired the first day. After that, Lamar Hunt, Robert Kraft, and one other NFL owner, I forget who, but one of their buddies, they bought all of the teams. And they, all three of them, owned 10 teams until other owners could get recruited and the league had stabilized. So salute to the Hunts for saving MLS back in the day.
Did they do anything shady?
I don't think so.
You got three teams. You try to stack one up.
Oh, I would.
They got a lot of stadiums built in that time. They really did. Yeah.
You know, Bob Kraft had that idea.
I guarantee it.
Load one up over here.
Heck yeah.
We're going to build a dynasty. Maybe that's where it all started. Okay. The stats people love about Dak's 2019 season. There's lots of them. We know how Bassick felt about those stats. He tried to punch Jeff once over it. We have not talked about those stats that Dak had in depth since Brian Broaddus joined the show. What meaning do you assign those incredible efficiency stats in the big picture? That's coming up next in the G-Bag Nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Hope you're having an awesome day. It is time to take a look at this conversation we had a few times with Mike Bassick. We had to discontinue the conversation angle for the safety and health of Jeff Kavanaugh.
Yeah, thanks for that, yeah.
You betcha.
Yeah, I got threatened a lot. Had things thrown at me, really just mistreated in general.
Do the situations matter on the big picture with the numbers? Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call the office of Frankel and Frankel, 214-333-3333, or get online to frankelfirm.com. Football Outsiders did an article. They said Cowboys shouldn't overthink it. Prescott is worth it, even if you have to lose Cooper. And, you know, the premise was, as we head towards the new CBA and we're doing tags and everything, if you get to a point where you have to choose, it's not even close. Dak's going to be, you know, the player and all that. And, you know, they're big on the advanced stats. So I said, okay, here we go. We haven't talked about this with Broaddus yet. Looking at it from an analytical big picture department, the numbers are just outstanding when it comes to Dak Prescott and the different ways that they can chalk it up, like air yards and adjusted air yards and DVOA and expected points added and all that. My theory moving forward is that while the advanced stats are great and they love Dak, they struggle to isolate just how important the passer is. Compared to how good's his protection, how good's the defense, how good's his wide receivers, what do they do when they get the ball? And I know there's stats for these things, but I don't think they can capture the importance of that quarterback and predict, is he still going to be this good and this efficient? I think a lot of those stats are a report on how good your passing game is, and the quarterback gets credit for it, and he should get the majority of the credit for it. But it's not necessarily predicting things into the future. You can't say, oh, well, you had 8.6 yards per attempt this year, and that's going to continue through your prime. It moves way too much for me to believe those stats are a great report card on how good you are. So any one season, I'm sitting there and looking at it and saying, I can't say that because Dak Prescott had 4,900 yards and was it 29, 30 touchdowns, 33 touchdowns, somewhere in there?
I think you're in the ballpark.
Okay. I can't look at that and say, bam, oh, wow, Dak's amazing now. I have to also say, when did the numbers come in? And to me, Brian, this is where I want to hand it off to you. When you look at a full season of stats, do you discount the guy if it happened when your team was getting blown out or you were blowing out the other team? So it's bad competition, or you found yourself under the eight ball so much, behind the eight ball, that now it's free touchdown time in a lot of games.
Yeah, I always am a big fan of the eyeball test. You know, that's what means the most to me. When I can watch, and you talk about things you can measure and things you can't measure, and I bring up a Connor Williams whiffing on a block, then all of a sudden it's the play was designed to do this, but now I have to improvise. Now I have to move. Now I have to go to my left. Now I have to find a receiver. The play shot. You know, that's the evaluations I make. You know, and I don't so much focus on, oh, garbage time as they talk about and stuff like that.
Okay.
If you throw the ball, you throw the ball. You know, that's the thing. You complete it. You know, you run the play. It's either completed, it's not completed. I look at it more. I don't focus on the numbers as much as people do. I say, okay, how do you make those around you better? How do you move the ball? How do you win games? The eyeball test for Dak Prescott is impressive. I've never seen anybody roll to his left and throw the ball as I put it this way. He made a throw to win the Giants game, a meaningless game, if you look at it 2 years ago. It's one of the greatest throws I've ever seen a quarterback make.
Beasley one?
The Beasley one. People say, well, there's quarterback. It reminded me very much of what Rodgers did against the Cowboys in that playoff game, rolling to his left and throwing the ball and finding Cook there for a 19-yard gain. I just I get overwhelmed with numbers. I just try and look at, okay, what is this guy doing to help me win a game? Like I say, Connor Williams misses his block. Okay, now he has to bail left, has to find a guy. Wait, the guy's not open short. Wait, I got to go long. Wait, the guy's coming all the way across. I got to find these guys. That's how I evaluate my quarterback. I evaluate how is he doing things in order to keep drives going to win games. I think those are the things you have to evaluate your guy on.
So to me, I mean, that goes to the situations. And as I'm watching games, I didn't feel like when the game was on the line, there was an opportunity to go win it. The Cowboys offense was good enough.
Yeah, I think that to me that there was early in his career, there were times where we did see him have success with moving the, you know, they were running the ball the first year and, you know, he got in a lot of favorable down and distance situations. I've always believed that he had to initially have to have people around him. And then I was on the air with you guys. We had some big arguments when I was working over at the Star. And I came around to what you guys were talking about. You know, I came around to, oh, you got to, you know, I'm like, hey, let's kind of hold back a little bit. Let's, you know, let's let the players around him, let, you know, run the football, try and help him, manage him in that. But he showed he was more than that. You know, my eyes showed me that he was more than that. But you guys were right about that. You were right about, hey, cut it loose. Let him go. Let him play. I was worried about interceptions and turnovers and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's where the eye test for me works. I don't need numbers to tell me the guy can make throws.
You're saying a lot of positive stuff about him, but you're also open-minded to moving on when the conversation goes
in that
direction.
I am. And I'm open-minded for, I'm thinking about team building. And I'm fascinated by the whole thing of, do you move on from a quarterback that is going to make $38 million when you can maybe find somebody that could come in and will your eyes tell you there's another guy? Is there another guy that could give you similar production or maybe take it a step further than that?
Yeah.
That I'm open to anything to try and help the team. Now, maybe helping the team is paying him $38 million. But now it's going to come down to, okay, where else – am I going to have to sacrifice that? Is he going to be, is that level going to be good enough in order for, is he going to carry the team when things aren't that good?
Yeah.
That's always been my concern. But I feel like that he's shown me things that you're like, hey, yeah, there's things he can do.
Showed you enough good stuff. It'd be really difficult to find another guy out there where it's like, oh, I believe in that. I'd have to be real picky.
Yeah,
or find a guy real cheap.
I think they got very fortunate to find Dak Prescott, and I think they in drafting him, I give Wade Wilson a lot of credit for going to Mississippi State and evaluating, and then the guys what they're able to do to bring him along, and they throw him into the mix, and he shows he's very capable of how he is. But yeah, the development is clearly there.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see how much the coach can make him better. That being said, since the rookie year, there's been half the season where it got bad. You know, some of the worst stretches of Cowboys offensive football happened in 2017 and 2018. And last year, you know, you're watching the Jets build a 17-point lead on you. You're getting blown out by a really incompetent Mitch Trubisky. And then you look at the offense and you see all of those players. If Patrick Mahomes had the talent, it'd be 35 points per game. You know, you move from 22 to 27 points per game, you almost double your interceptions. You know, Football Outsiders has some great stats on this. They do. They say he had 1,400 more yards than a replacement level player would have given him last year. They say Michael Gallup is 13.6 receiving DVOA, fell short of Cooper's 22.4. And because Gallup is so good, you could cut Cooper loose and still be good with Dak Prescott. I just can't go there yet. I think any one season is not enough. I'm not done evaluating quarterbacks and making permanent decisions on them for a while just because of how difficult it is to evaluate in a league that's built to be even.
Is there a point in time you will draw the line on numbers? Is there certain numbers that you'll just say, no, again, I'm the eyeball test guy. Is there certain that say, okay, that's just too much numbers? The numbers are, it's too much to take in.
I think my take is with baseball, I think they've perfected it. And with football, I like it. I think it can point you in the right direction. Go over there. But I'm not willing to take it as a full part of my evaluation yet when I look at the numbers. I love the numbers for play calling. I love the numbers for, you know, scouting when it allows you to whittle things down and, right. you know, really get an appreciation for what other players produce. There's ways that I think football and the numbers are a perfect fit. But when it comes to the performance metrics and ranking players, I think things are way too fluid and unpredictable in this game to really put hard determinations on that.
I just don't know how you put a number on a guy that when the guards beat on a pass rush and now you're having to make plays. Is there a number for that? You know, I haven't seen anybody say, "Oh, he's a 1.09 on a void," or so. You know what I'm saying? I haven't seen that. I haven't seen somebody tell me. I just know that, you know, again, by my eyes, you know, I could tell when a guy's a really good football player. I don't need a number to tell me that. It's just the evaluation part of it, though.
Yeah, and I think it's hard because you can never, like, people will say that they're going to try to, but you can never adjust for who's on your team.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, you can say, oh, no, we did. We averaged out playing against the whatever defense. So you can't perfectly say on a per-play basis or compared my offensive line versus this defensive line across all of these games, like it's never going to be equal. So that's the only thing I have about the numbers is you have to just be careful what you apply and how much you let it affect what you're doing. But I think any team that's not taking advantage of it in some way, shape, or form is insane and behind the times. But you do have to be careful not to use it as a catch-all where it's like, says here that throwing's better than running on first down. Never run the ball. Like, yeah. No, there's a level of common sense and how you're going to make this work with the numbers.
I think I really like what you're saying about the play calling stuff. I do feel like there's huge value in that.
Yeah,
if you're able to kind of get an idea, get yourself in a rhythm the way you're calling plays and be effective doing it, I'm all for that.
You can optimize keeping the defense off balance if you just know which way they're going to lean. Or don't give them any indication based on your personnel and your alignment that you're going to do one thing or the other. I think that perhaps was my biggest frustration with Jason Garrett, just how willing he was to basically spell out what they were about to do. I thought, you know, it really surprised me that somebody as bright as Jason Garrett would continue to do that for
so many years. He is a product, though, of his environment. That's something that he's always, it's ingrained in him the way he does things. And he's not willing to change is one of the reasons why he's not here.
And I think the numbers on carving up your salary cap are genius, you know, and the Cowboys at times appear to really pay attention to that. Like, oh, no, the running back's not worth this.
Until a player tells you no.
Yeah.
They cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, though. The Lawrence and Elliott situations on cave, that's going to go back and bite them because it's going to cost them some players that they probably would like to have had here. Yeah. I agree with what you guys are saying about Byron Jones. I do. It's going to force you now. I was using draft capital to go get the best corner in the draft when he got to me at 9.
Yeah.
You know, that's a decision I had to make because I did something wrong with my money.
You could keep Byron Jones if you just flipped the switch on Zach Martin and Tyrone Crawford. Boom. Now we have more than enough money to pay this guy. Are you willing to go back to that way of doing business?
But you're kicking the can down the street a little bit. Yeah.
A little kick.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a kick there.
Yeah.
I think Byron Jones.
I can nudge it down the street to keep Byron.
Yeah, if you have premium players at premium positions and they have a great track record of staying healthy, give it a little kick. That would add $2 million to Zach Martin's cap hit in each of the next 2 years or 4 years.
Yeah, he's the one guy. Him and the right tackle have played pretty well for you, though. I think that one thing is the cap has gone up every year, too.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen the cap go up. It's not the cap's going down. So if you're going to kick the can, maybe you can make up for it.
If it's on the right player. You can do that. Like Zach Martin having a little higher cap hit, playing as one of the best guards in football. That's fine.
All right. It is the G-Bag Nation. And coming up next, it's time for Jeff Cavanaugh's unnamed segment of the day. Where are we going with that?
What does Daddy Shark think about those cheaters down the highway next?
Well, thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Hope you're having a great day. It's time for Jeff's unnamed segment of the day.
Thanks, Kevin. I have super, super controversial news item that Lucius might have some interest in here, since our reigning G-bag of the day is currently Mad Mike Hughes, who's dead.
That's my guy, man. RIP, bro.
Very controversial report that we'll have to go over on him. But first, Shout out to Sean and RJ, who had on Elvis Andrews this morning and interviewed John Daniels here on your home of the Rangers. The John Daniels part two will air tomorrow morning. And so I did want to check in with what used to be known as Baby Daddy. Now I refer to him as Daddy Shark because he has actual children.
Do-to-do-to-do.
So he can't be in a relationship with me, obviously.
Yeah.
And Elvis.
It'd be weird.
Just tell me. Yeah, it would have been weird if it ever happened.
Yeah.
Are you personally upset with those cheating Astros?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's in the same page in this. You know, you always cheating in games, you're always going to hate that. You know, that's one of the things. I love to compete, but I love to compete, you know, in a fair way. So when somebody has advantage on me, and especially if you don't know, for sure you're going to get upset, you're going to get angry. But it gets to a point that, you know, you have to move on also. I mean, you know, even their apology wasn't the way we wanted, or the punishment wasn't the way everybody wanted. I mean, at least they got punished for it. So, you know, I'm over with it. I just want to keep moving forward. I think the season is a month away. So, I mean, the last thing, I just want to keep, you know, throwing stuff to the fire. I think that, you know, it's going to be a tough year for them. We're going to make it even tougher.
Oh.
We're going to go out there and beat them this year. So, I don't really worry too much about them. I will worry always about our team and be able to keep getting better. And like I say, you know, get back to winning the division is our first goal.
Now, when Elvis said, we are going to make it tougher, I thought that might mean that the Rangers were going to sign Vicente Padilla again and just have him go out there headhunting everybody. Where Michael Young was like, can we get this guy off the team?
Yeah.
He keeps getting me hit. It's messed up. The Astros are now up to 7 guys that have been hit in spring training.
Oh, they got hit again this afternoon?
They've had 7 guys get hit. Bregman got hit, but it looked like it was just a hanging breaking ball, so probably not on purpose. But there's going to be teams that are coming after them, for sure.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, at what point are they going to start charging the mound, and will it ever die? Because we're going to have fights. The Astros aren't just going to let you plunk them all day, even if a lot of us think they deserve it. Like, you're cheaters.
Yeah, and
you still have a World Series you didn't win. I'm going
to
hit you.
The players are in no mood to let the commissioner boss them around on this.
Right.
They you know, they look
disappointed in him right now.
Uh-huh.
They're like, you didn't punish them enough.
Yeah.
These guys cheated the game and won the World Series.
And you can't punish me just because you want to, like Roger Goodell can.
Right. That's not going to work.
No, so I think it's going to go on all year. I think the Astros pitchers will start throwing back.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Is now, does it come on the responsibility of Verlander and those guys to say, okay, they're hitting my guys.
Yeah.
And what's the league going to do when they start throwing back at the other teams?
McCullers will throw back.
That's what I'm saying.
He's
will.
A diva. He'll throw back.
I think you're going to have some fights and some suspensions and some fines, and the players will ultimately decide, man, okay, I've got my swing at them. We've hit them. You know, we've been fined and suspended, and now it's time to move on. But I think it's going to be a really nasty first couple months of the season.
I think players will get even more mad if the Astros are great again.
Because they'll be like,
dang it, they won one cheating, and they're really good. Now I'm super mad. So there you go. Elvis Andrews, who's on Sean and RJ this morning. Now, moving on to the most important news of the day. As everyone at this point knows, Mad Mike Hughes died over the weekend. Mad Mike Hughes was a flat earther who nothing made him happier than to fire himself into the air on a rocket.
Yeah.
He liked to do that.
He'd done that before?
Yeah.
That's his thing, man. He's a limo driver. That's his thing.
So the only reason it went bad was he lost the parachute.
He lost the parachute, brother.
Well, and he kept trying to get higher and higher. He had successfully gone to 1,900 feet, and then over the weekend he got to 5,000, but one of the parachutes came off on the launch, and apparently there were 3 more in the rocket. Not real sure why they weren't used, but
G-force knock him out or something.
It's hard to say, but he did, I guess. He did get 5,000 feet in the air. The parachute ripped off right at the launch, and it's real nerve-wracking if you watch the video, because he had a video guy with him, because apparently he was filming something for a science channel.
Mm-hmm.
And
homemade rocket. So they're like, this is a show.
Is it
on that channel? Homemade rockets or something like that. And he was going to show himself die, basically.
He's got the freelance photographer Justin Chapman out there, and there's over 5 million views of this now, and 11 of them are me. Because it goes, and then the parachute's not there, and he goes really fast and really high, so you lose track of him. And then the camera's just kind of sitting there, like, looking at nothing. And then it locates him.
Oh, no.
And you watch him on the way down. And he doesn't zoom in, but it finds the object. And now the object's on the way down. And as Lucius told you earlier, when it touches down, there's a big old dust cloud.
Yeah,
and
a little bounce.
Maybe a little bit of a bounce. Didn't really go.
It's not funny, fam.
It's not funny at all. No one should laugh at that.
It's kind of crazy, too, that that rude Jew DJ in New York, that he went on the show. The guy was like, you're going to kill yourself. ended up happening.
Well, he used to be. So he's been a daredevil for a long time. Yeah. And I believe he still holds the world record for the longest limo jump.
Yeah. Like he's a limo driver. He's real proud of that.
He would take limos.
Well, he was real proud of that.
And treat them like Evel Knievel treats a motorcycle. Yeah. And he would go jump over stuff in a limo.
Okay.
He was doing that bit. That's a good bit.
You know, I wouldn't mind doing that if I had a roll cage.
Watching this video, that's a heck of a way to go out.
Yeah.
It is.
He had his cremated cat in there, too, man. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I didn't know that. Yep. Yeah, the Science Channel, which had been chronicling his attempt for a show called Homemade Astronauts.
Homemade Astronauts. Yeah. I said Homemade Rockets. Whatever.
They did confirm his death. They said it's always his
dream.
Yeah, they confirmed it. They said it was always his dream to do this launch, and Science Channel was there to chronicle his journey. So he's got the world record still for jumping a limo 103 feet. Jumped a limo 103 feet.
That's a pretty impressive jump in a limo.
He was working towards...
Must have been turbo boosted.
He was working toward... If he had knocked out this 5,000 footer, he'd come back later to go higher.
Yep.
Because his goal was to get to where the Earth's atmosphere meets outer space, which is about 62 miles. So 5,000 feet, he wasn't quite there.
And the parachute fell off early? Yeah.
We had
a chance here. Yeah.
So he shouldn't have made the rocket himself. That's all I'm saying.
It looked like a bad 4th of July thing going off. Yeah. You see that? It's all crazy going up in the sky.
I think if he'd have gone to Hobby Town and talked to my guy,
there
Big John.
There we go.
Some of the pieces come off like a mobile home.
Yes.
Facts.
Yes.
Well, they did. They had to. So they had to.
God, bro.
They had to abort the mission at first because he was just getting stuff off Craigslist. And one of the things that he bought didn't work right. And so he was like, all right, that's not going to work.
Like a parachute?
Right. I have to get back on Craigslist. I don't know where he got the parachute.
Like fins or something to make it go straight?
This is the highly controversial part of the story, Lucius. Listen to this. So, back in 2018, he did say like he wanted to do this because he thought the Earth was flat, right? He was like, do I think it's shaped like a Frisbee? I believe it is. Do I know for sure? No. That's why I want to go to space. So now, I want to go to space on a rocket I build. Sure. Now, over the weekend, a PR representative said, hold on now. I got to tell you guys. Mad Mike did not believe that the Earth was flat. They said, and I quote,
it was a bit.
We used Flat Earth as a PR stunt.
See, it's all...
Period.
Nobody really believes it.
I don't know. I've heard this guy talk for 5 years about that, though.
Now, this is not words from Mad Mike himself.
Oh, they waited after he died?
Yeah. This is a PR rep.
Don't speak for me.
After he'd already splattered. He said...
splattered. Bro, come on.
Well, that's probably what happened, right? He said he was...
the Earth flat.
He was a true daredevil decades before the latest round of rocket missions. Flat Earth allowed us to get so much publicity that we kept going. I know he didn't believe in Flat Earth.
Oh, no.
And it was a shtick. That's from his PR people. Saying, nope, didn't believe it at all.
Yeah, I don't believe that. He had too much conviction. He went on like for 5 years straight on Rude Jew's show just talking about it. He had so many videos about the Flat Earth. He had these theories. You can't fake those theories.
I mean, if a physicist wanted to come and talk to me, but that guy... He kind of talked like, you know, that guy who would tinker with lawnmower motors in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of like he'd been drinking.
Go-karts out of them.
Had a bad meth habit in the 80s or something. Yeah. I don't know. But he didn't strike me as a guy that was that sophisticated, you know?
He built a rocket. He got himself up there and down once.
A few times.
Yeah, he got down before. He made it. I don't know that I would be comfortable pulling this. Now, would you rather the Earth be flat or round if you were going to crash into it from 5,000 feet at terminal velocity?
Well, I guess I'd rather have it be flat so I could get up there and at least get confirmation, right? Hey, I learned something cool right before I die.
No, I mean in trying to survive the drop. You know, because if it's curved, obviously your landing is much different.
Kind of bounce differently.
Right?
Yeah. You have a chance to roll off it.
Yeah, exactly. You get a nice
skipped off.
There. You just kind of tuck and tuck and roll, yeah.
You hit with both feet, kind of like a parachute landing, right?
I would, yeah, exactly.
Come on, man.
I would love.
It's too soon, bro.
That would be fun, though.
I just like the fact the guy said, you're going to die. You're going to die.
I don't know why you didn't grab.
Yeah, you're not gonna, it's not going to work.
Oh, can I play a little bit of that? Just so a reminder?
Yeah.
Asking for permission. Why don't you just shoot yourself up in the air?
Because I don't want to wind up in federal handcuffs, which is what can happen to you.
I think you're just going to die. Like, how are you not going to die? You shoot yourself up in a rocket.
Okay, here's the deal, guy. How many rockets have you built in your life? How much you know about rockets?
I don't know about rockets.
You know, there's a dynamic, and it plays out in public sometimes. The dumber you are, the higher the probability is that you think you're the smartest person in the room.
I actually kind of read about that. If you survey...
That makes so much sense, right? Man.
If you survey the entire country and ask them, are you, you know, average, above average, below average at fill in the blank, pretty much everyone says they're above average at everything, even though that doesn't add up.
Yeah.
It's not possible for that to add up. Hey, he found out that gravity exists, though.
He did.
He was kind of skeptical about that.
Sure did.
He was not a believer.
But R.I.P. to Mad Mike. Yeah, a life well-lived, man.
Love the hell out
well
of
done.
You.
There are a lot of mysteries out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, who the hell really knows what's going on outside?
I mean, I don't know what shape the Earth is. I trust the scientists.
Are we in the Matrix?
Hell if I know.
Is this a computer program? We don't know these kind
of
things.
Oh, man, the framework. Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4.
Anything is possible, right? I'm totally open-minded to stuff. And when really, really smart people are talking about it, I'm blown away. You know, like these quantum physicists and stuff that'll be like, oh, yeah, you know.
I don't trust them either because they can make up anything. And we'd be like, okay.
Right.
Because they know words.
Talk over your head.
We can't check the math. Yeah, there's no way.
I don't know.
Oh, that's bull.
There's too many letters, shapes, and numbers and divided by signs in your little formula. I just believe you.
We'll take a look at what is on 105.3thefan.com. The Cowboys, did they really meet with Dak Prescott? And yeah, JD was on the morning show, and he answered a very direct question. What the hell happened in free agency? We'll give you JD's answer to that and more next in the G-Bag Nation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.